Howdy-do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, nice to be here.
Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Thanks for letting us back again.
You're not having deja vu. We're just doing a whole new show on Wednesday, but I have invited Charlotte to talk about an article that she's come across discussing robots. So, of course, it made sense to have my friendly neighborhood robot on the show with me as well. So, Charlotte, tell us about this piece that you discovered.
Okay, so it was in the London Evening Standard, which is our evening newspaper here in London. Mm-hmm. And it's talking about a trial we're going to have at Gatwick Airport, which is kind of the second major airport. It's actually technically just outside London, but it's a London airport. It's at Gatwick, and they are going to use robots from a company called Stanley Robotics, a French company, to do valet parking. Basically, it means you can have drivers really near each other. It's designed to get rid of all that stress that you always have when you arrive at the airport with a ton of bags and can't find a parking space and have to walk miles. Mm-hmm. It's designed to get rid of all of that, basically. And these very cute looking robots, which look kind of like Wall-E, basically you leave your car and take your keys, and the little robot comes over picks your car up on a forklift, takes it to a different parking spot, and then you pick it up when you get back.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that was my first question, was how exactly robots are managing this. And apparently the way they're being managed is your car just gets picked up by this thing and then sat down someplace else, right?
Yeah, it's a little cute robot face with a kind of forklift device at the back. We got a nice picture of it over on macobserver.com.
Excellent. So, John, what do you think?
Well, my first question was, well, I think it's cool. I think it's a great application for robots. My first question was, what if you have an all-wheel drive car that normally requires a flatbed tow and you can't, it's not sufficient to just simply lift up the front wheels
Look at the images, all the wheels are up.
Oh, so there's a robot that fits underneath that lifts it, and then there's the one.
Yeah,
in
it's
front
a for- like
it.
I say, it's like a forklift. Yeah. And it goes all the way under the car. So the images I've got, all the wheels, because it's a fair point, but all the wheels are off in the images I've seen.
That's a lot of leverage on a little robot there in the front.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, they don't go particularly high, it doesn't look like. But, yeah, I mean, it's carrying a significant weight. It's kind of a 4x4 type thing I've got in the picture we've got on Mac Observer that it's managing to lift.
So you lock your car and
off you go.
And you keep your keys.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to worry about somebody assaulting the robot and stealing your car.
Right.
Nope. Well, I mean, look, we all know that those types of things are hackable or whatever, but it's no more of a risk than you normally parking your car.
And taking your keys with you.
Yeah, like
right.
Someone can break into your car if it's parked outside the shops, and that's a risk will always remain, especially with electric fobs and stuff, but it's no more than that.
Does the robot bring your car to the terminal when you're ready to...
That, I'm not sure. I think so, or you just walk around and pick it up once you're back.
Well, you can't get into it when you get back because the cars are parked so close together.
So yeah, so I imagine it does, because the idea is that you can kind of take more cars in.
Yeah.
And it's leaves you in a nice wide space. Apparently,
it's one of those applications where it's perfectly suited to a robot.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be real smart.
Exactly. And apparently people sort of didn't get what was happening. When they tried it for 5 months at Charles de Gaulle and apparently in Paris, and apparently it was very successful. And people were sort of so comfortable and au fait with it, they just left their cars and didn't really understand why the car was in a different place when it came back. when they returned.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really think that they didn't quite get what the robot was doing.
Right. Okay.
Is it expensive? How expensive is it compared to...
Well, I assume it will be... I haven't seen prices, but eventually it'll be cheaper than people, won't it?
One would think.
Yeah. No more valets screaming around the parking lot in your Ferrari.
Right, exactly. Well, in your Ferrari, John.
Oh, me? No. On my salary?
I don't take the supercar to the airport, yeah. You know.
We don't pay the robot much, Charlotte.
I think what's also interesting is, first of all, it's not only going to be in Gatwick, it's going to be in airports in Paris, Lyon, and Dusseldorf as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a few places in Europe. And apparently it was very successful over at Paris-Charles de Gaulle for 5 months. So now, obviously, the company would say it was all fantastic, but mm-hmm. it's interesting. They're going to do this at Gatwick in August, the height of the summer holiday season. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be pretty confident it's going to work if you're happy to do it at the busiest time of year for an airport.
You know, robots and scheduling.
Right, exactly.
The thing that I was struck by with this is that even with this sort of forklift method of moving the cars around, that it still says that they're able to put a lot more cars in the same amount of space.
Right.
So that means that the parking lots are going to be even more efficient as long as you get all the people out of them, I guess.
That's meant to be the idea, yeah.
Yeah. So if this were available and you were taking a trip, Charlotte, would you use the robot car park?
I mean, yeah, why not?
Cool.
I think absolutely. Listen, I'm like me, like many other people, have some childhood memories of, turning up at the airport with a very stressed dad, parking the car and bags and children and mm-hmm. siblings and parents spilling everywhere. And this will, and then you have to walk 3 miles to get back to the car. Mm-hmm. So I don't see why you wouldn't be come to do this. I don't know if they'll charge some kind of premium. Valet parking is obviously already a premium service. So I don't know whether they'll charge more for this. I'm not quite sure. It will be interesting to see how it works when the trial keeps up, and I'll keep an eye on it for TMO readers. But it seems to me a pretty efficient, quite sensible thing that one would want to do.
Well, you know, the nice thing about it is that your car stays locked and you keep the keys. You don't have to worry about
key.
You don't have to worry about an unscrupulous valet rummaging through your glove compartment looking for iPod touches or registration information or hand grenades. You know, it solves a lot of problems.
Absolutely right. I completely agree.
And that was the first thing that I thought of, Charlotte, when you had mentioned this, was what it's like to, like, how to solve the problem of basically giving your keys to a robot, because that doesn't seem like a thing people would be interested in doing. But you don't have to, and I thought it was pretty clever how they got around that. So you take your keys with you, and you don't have to worry about, you know, having to take your key off the key ring or using the valet key if you have a car that came with the valet keys, you know, making sure you leave that, making sure that that's the one that you get back and all of that kind of stuff. So I thought that at least initially, this seems like something pretty interesting in that respect, because I like how they've done that. And I would like to see if it's possible to do something like this in a place with maybe more turnover, because like valet parking, I imagine, I don't know if they're doing this for like long term. Here we have the long term lot and the short term lot. So, sure. You know, it doesn't make any sense, you know, like, it ends up being cheaper to use the long-term lot if you're going to be gone more than X number of days or whatever. So I wonder if this is long-term parking that they're talking about, or if it's shorter term where there's lots and lots of turnover, because I would be curious if there's different optimization for that. But I get to keep my keys, and all I have to do is just get out of the car at the shuttle stop and then, you know, let the robot whisk it away. That seems about as safe as anything else that you do with your car when you leave it at the airport. So I would think it would be a pretty good idea if you have to be parked at the airport. This seems like a good way to do that.
I mean, will we start seeing this stuff at hotels, for instance?
Yeah, that's my next question, is where does it go from here? And, you know, like, we have a lot of parking structures. You know, would they start doing this like in certain parking structures, things like that?
I mean, you guys in America love someone parking your car for you. I find this a totally like fascinating experience whenever I'm in the United States, that you have some poor guys who normally who have to stand outside a hotel or a building waiting for someone to give them some car keys and a tip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I suspect the union of valet car parkers is not going to be happy about this.
Is there any indication, Charlotte, that the Stanley Robots is going to sell this in the U.S.? I know the Standard article doesn't address that, but have you...
No, I haven't seen anything about it coming to the United States yet. This appears to be that all the trials I've read of are in Europe and European airports and cities. But I guess if you guys over in the States see it as a success, I can't imagine that American airports and similar outlets would not be keen to take this on.
Yeah, how would you not? Yeah.
I'm sure the company would be want to go to such a big market like the United States.
Considering that we have lots and lots and lots and lots of cars and lots of places where something like this might make it more efficient to get people in and out of those lots where all those cars are parked, that seems pretty great. I mean, I know it's not a massive airport, but I know how long, like if you... There are certain routes that I take to different places that take me near Portland's airport. And I know how long I spend driving next to the long-term lot and the short-term lot. And it is so much parking. So, and that's just here, which is not, you know, a massive airport. Like, you know, everybody loves it, but it's not the biggest airport. So I can't even imagine what it would be like at, you know, like John's.
JFK.
Yeah. It's not Denver. It's not JFK. It's not Atlanta. You know, seeing something like this on that kind of scale seems like it would be a pretty good idea. And, you know, and even like with parking structures and stuff, like when you go to Disneyland, having your car just whisked away for you and then return as if by magic would be pretty great.
Right. And I think it's all controlled through an app. So you say, I'm coming to the airport this time. Please have Stan the robot ready for me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's all controlled through an app from what I gathered in my research. So, I guess that gives you some kind of extra security as well, that you know you're not just leaving your car. You've kind of booked mm-hmm. into a system.
I'm sure it navigates around the airport with GPS. And I was just thinking about what would happen to our infrastructure if the GPS system went down. Think about how many things would fail and society would freeze up fast.
I think... Car parking robots will be the least of our problems at the point where GPS collapses.
Absolutely, but it just made me think of it. Yeah.
Excellent.
We can talk about another day, actually, but it's one of the issues, apparently, in Bex is there are some GPS-related issues. But I have a piece on that coming up, probably towards the end of the week on MacObserver.com.
All right.
So we can discuss it then.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. And as these robots become more prevalent and start being used in more interesting ways to sort of automate some of the stuff, like this is sort of the thing that that I was always led to believe as a kid anyway, they were meant to do is take away the hassle parts of your life. Like you were talking about, Charlotte, trying to get to vacation, being at the airport, maybe not quite on time, having to figure out where to put the car on top of where to put the luggage and where to put the kids and everything else and try to get where you're going. And, you know, having a robot sort of smooth all of that over would be pretty great. So we will talk about it more as it gets more popular.
I will. Maybe I'll see if I can head down to the airport and take a look at something.
Charlotte's going to go pitch Mac Observer. I need a vacation because I have to try the car robot at the airport. So
I was talking to John Markoff recently on Background Mode. He's a New York Times writer, retired now. And he wrote an article that comes to mind when I published the Background Mode. I'll link to it. He wrote a great article, What Comes After Roomba? And he was talking about the difficulties of, in general, developing the, you know, Star Trek Android, the Dick Command, Lieutenant mm-hmm. Commander Data, like personal family service robot as opposed to mechanical robots like Stan.
We're going to dig into that in just a second, though, John. You're getting ahead of me.
All right.
We're very excited about robots.
I can tell. So, it's Robot Wednesday here in Mac Observer.
And we'll continue in part two.
Yes, and we're going to talk more. So, spoiler alert, we're going to talk more about robots in about a minute. But first, I want to tell you about one of my favorite pieces of technology that helps make things better on my end of the world, and that is ExpressVPN. So, as you know, we talk about it a lot here. There's been a lot of security breaches with online information always getting breached, and then all of that information being collected and reassembled and given out. You know, it's really hard to make sure that your data stays your own. And even just making an online purchase, or, you know, maybe you're using the Starbucks Wi-Fi and you're trying to check your email, and, you know, even that could cause you to open up your computer or even your phone to certain forms of attack and people being able to get to some of that information when you don't want them to. And that's really what ExpressVPN is meant to help you with, because ExpressVPN, VPN, as you know, stands for Virtual Private Network, and it allows you a way to ExpressVPN allows you to have a VPN that you run all the time to keep people out of your stuff. So it has easy to use apps that run seamlessly in the background. I have one on my computer, I have one on my iPhone, I have one on my iPad, and it's really easy to enable and disable. So for example, when I'm on Wi-Fi at my house, I have other security measures in place, so I don't have to worry about using it here, but I do have to worry about using it if I'm out of the house and connecting to Wi-Fi or doing something someplace. It's very easy to click. All I have to do is click on it, and my VPN is enabled. All of my information is encrypted. Your internet browsing is secure and anonymized by ExpressVPN, which means that you know, those trackers and things from social media sites and other places that are trying to build profiles of you are not able to do so, because that information that's getting to them becomes anonymized. So it's not something that's specific to you anymore. It's less than $7 a month to do this. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what you want to do is head over to expressvpn.com/TDO. That's ExpressVPN. .com/TDO, and you'll get 3 months free with a 1-year package. So head over there, learn more, and get signed up today. Now, John got ahead of me with the robots.
Sorry.
That's okay. I know you're really excited about it, and that's why I wanted to continue to let you go. But we're going to talk a little more about robots, because John, you had an interesting guest on Background Mode.
John Markoff is a Pulitzer Prize winning science and computer author, retired from the New York Times a few years ago, and now doing a research project at Stanford. And he wrote an article that we talked about during the show, which will air soon, Monday, I think, called What Comes After Roomba. Mm-hmm. And he kind of outlined the history of our fantasies and our attempts to build robots of various kinds. And if you look around CES and you look around the robot technology, you'll see these different kinds of mechanical robots that mix drinks, or little robot dogs, or the failed Curie that is pretty small and can't do a whole lot of heavy lifting. And there's an interesting paragraph in this article. He says, since then, there have been waves of failed attempts to create more sophisticated home robots. There have been efforts to build humanoid robots, social companion robots, robots that cook, robots that do your dry cleaning, robots that fold your clothes, robots that change the kitty litter. And we talked about the difficulty of that. And he cited a Chinese artificial intelligence expert who said, his name is Kai Fu Li, and Markoff has a lot of respect for him, and he quoted him in the article. And he says that the problem is that customers need a reasonable cost product, but their expectations are high and their patience is limited. So it makes it very difficult to build a great product. And I asked him, do you think we'll see, you know, family service robots of the kind in the movie Robot and Frank in our lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I don't think so. I think it's 20, 30, 40 years away before we'll see Lieutenant Commander Data walking around the house, changing the kitty litter and doing the laundry and washing dishes. Because of the cost. I mean, if you look at the robots from Boston Robotics, they're mm-hmm. huge, they're heavy, they're clunky.
Is that the
500 pounds
creepy robot?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it jumps over boxes, too.
That scared the hell out of me.
$1 million robots.
Hold on, John. Hmm? The running dog robot?
No, the door opening dog robot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Literally nothing is safe.
Okay.
Chew on you in your sleep.
So that's the line then for you, Charlotte. Like, you'll let one have your car, but the dog one, no dice.
It opened a door.
Okay. Was it the round doorknob or was it like the handle doorknob?
Handle pushing the door down and then two of them combined to open the friggin' door.
Okay. Because I've seen cats do that, and we know...
I don't trust cats either.
We know Charlotte stands on cats.
you bring up a great point, Charlotte, and that is that not only is it extremely difficult to build one of these robots that a family can afford, excuse me, but the creepy factor we also talked about. You know, what is the robot doing? Is it spying on you? What is it uploading to the mothership? You know, what is it stealing from the pantry? You know, what is it reporting back?
Now, here's a thing, John, when you had mentioned this earlier, one of the things I thought about, you know, you said John Markoff says that this is 20, 30, 40 years away. And I come to this as a huge fan of the TV show Westworld, which has like fully autonomous interactive robots. And here's why I'm bringing that up. Stick with me, Charlotte. Probably also a show that freaks Charlotte out. But... So the thing about that is that when I watched like interviews with people that were involved with creating the show and different things like that, one of the things that they said was when we started doing research for this show, the thing that really struck us was that all of this stuff is a lot closer than anybody thinks. No, we're not spitting distance from an actual amusement park like the one that they have on the show. But he said, you know, from a practical standpoint, like none of this stuff is as far off as it seems like it is. So that's why I'm interested in where in the rest of what John Markoff has to say about it.
Well, even robots like Sophia, which are pretty sophisticated verbally and intellectually, don't have the physical dexterity, legs that they can climb stairs and lift you up if you fall down and do tasks around the house and carry the groceries in up the steps from the car and things like that. So, yeah, I think we'll get there and we'll have prototype robots pretty soon that can do that, but they just won't be affordable by an average family.
I have to say, I was slightly taken aback when you said 30 to 40 years. I had always assumed this kind of stuff would be the type of thing that suddenly escalates quite quickly and that we see very rapid advancements.
Me too.
So I'm quite interested that you said 30 to 40 years.
Well, it's been my fantasy too, because I'm a baby boomer and I'm looking forward to having a robot, you know, do the heavy lifting and carry the groceries in from the car up the steps and, you know, do the household chores.
I can't tell you the level of self-restraint I'm having to make here.
So that has been my dream for a long time, but I don't think I'll be able to afford it in my lifetime.
I think where we are right now is the things that do something in an automated way that perhaps takes a bit more horsepower, like the car park robot. You know, it takes a little bit of an algorithm to go, this car is this big, it'll fit in this much space, you know, and I need this much clearance to get it in and out again. Like, that's not a whole lot of computation for a robot, like overall, right?
Well, that's another point, Kelly, that the robots have to not only be able to do the physical task, but they have to intuit what it is you're really driving at. It's one thing to, you know, do a premeditated task like sweep the floor. It's another thing when you say, you know, can you fire up the TV and switch the remote over and dial up Netflix for me, the robot.
Yeah. And that's part of what, you know, that's part of what I've been sort of wondering about with this is like those sorts of robots. I feel like we've got that pretty well dialed in. I don't think the car park robot's going to have a problem. It's going forward and having, you know, how we're going to do that the rest of the time, basically, you know, because I know this sounds odd because it's people's cars, but there aren't really a lot of people involved in that transaction. You know, to get the car into the other parking space and then have it come back again. Like, that's a pretty straightforward, like, here's what people want. Here's what people want. Here's what's happening. And it has very little, if nothing at all, to do with, you know, what's on Netflix? What are my plans tonight? What should I do about this thing? Like, none of that stuff makes any difference, right? So that's what I'm curious about with these, like, as soon as you have them start having to interact with people, you know, it's the same, like, what I think about is when Siri first came out. And one of the things that people said is, oh, Siri doesn't work. Siri doesn't work. Siri's dumb. Siri doesn't know what I mean. And the reason for that is because there were people who were trying to talk to her conversationally like she was just another person, and that a person hearing what you were saying would be able to go, well, I know the words you said were these, but I know what you're trying to get to is that. So I'm going to answer the thing that you wanted and not the thing you asked me. And Siri doesn't have that capability. And I think that's part of where this is going to go. And we're going to end up fighting this battle for a long time.
I'll give you a good example of that. Just this weekend, I asked Siri, I was out of the house shopping, and I said, Siri, what's the score of the Los Angeles-Philadelphia game? And it's in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And Siri comes back and says, which Los Angeles, the Rams or the Chargers?
Mm-hmm.
And the Chargers have long since been blown out of the playoffs.
Okay.
Not playing. But Siri didn't know that and didn't understand that.
Right.
Mm.
Well, and I think, and part of that is because you asked with half the team and not the other half of the team. So whenever I ask for a score, minor basketball, not football, but whenever I ask for a score, I have to ask her for the team names. So I have to ask her for the score of the Portland Trailblazers and the Houston Rockets ball game instead of, you know, and
do better.
Yeah. And I like, you know, I know at one point when my dad was visiting, he asked her for Seattle and somebody, and he meant baseball, and she gave him a football score.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are the oops. But, you know, you have to give her enough information to go on, and I understand it. But I also understand that, you know, if my dad had asked me, for example, I would know that what he meant was a baseball game, and I would get the score for him, you know, because I know that's the one that he actually cares about. So,
but people don't have that problem. We don't have to explain a chapter and verse to people.
Right.
People intuit.
No, but presumably the such devices are going to get there.
One would hope.
I mean, they're going to, you know, I know that we do get context in these things, don't we? Increasingly, like machine learning means that such devices are going to learn that your dad is a baseball fan, not a basketball, a football fan, say, and he will look at that. Like my phone, you know, knows to put up the scores of the soccer team it knows I support. Do you know what I mean? All the various AI powered things do get there, don't they? They do eventually learn some context. That's kind of the core of machine learning and artificial intelligence as I understood it.
Well, and to put it even more simply, when my dad asks for a football score, and when Charlotte asks for a football score, they're talking about two very different things.
Right.
She should be able to. And you would hope that, you know, based on like where you are and things like that, that it would be possible for that to be a thing that happens.
I mean, I have a perfect example of this. The soccer team I support is often known as Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you ask an American powered device for the Spurs score, it gives you the San Antonio.
It gives
Spurs.
You a San Antonio basketball football
team.
Record.
Right.
Yes,
it doesn't give me a North London soccer team.
Right.
But surely, eventually, these things are going to have the intelligence to know this is a London person. This person is located in London. They have done searches for soccer before.
Right.
Let's put all that together.
It's and that's. Like, I feel like we really do have a long way to go. So for as much as there is discussion of, you know, like I said, how close these things are going to be and all of that, you know, I know there's a huge difference between getting the assistant in your phone to understand the question that you're asking versus having somebody versus having a park like Westworld, for example. So I get that there's a gap there, okay? But I just thought it was really interesting to hear them talk about how much closer this is than we sort of think it is, and then being able to reconcile that with the stuff that we see out in the real world, like, you know, like they had those there were a lot of things that were automated at CES, like some driverless things and mm-hmm. you know, delivery bots and people hamburgers or something, and those are, I think those are. An interesting idea, and I think we're going to end up with some. There'll be some bumps on the way along the
patience,
way, but I think
patience,
it'll be good.
Patience factor, and upgrades.
Yeah,
But also robots that can open doors are freaky.
I'll give you that. Okay. I think we're going to have to leave it there.
So, Charlotte, your robot can open the door to let the cat out.
What kind of hell future is this?
Out, not in. He said out. Oh. So maybe it'd be okay. All right. So John's giving Charlotte nightmares. We're going to have to stop now. Back to your quarters. All right, but Charlotte, thanks for coming by and talking to us about
thanks
this.
Thanks so much for having me.
She can't sleep tonight, but you know.
Nope.
My job is done.
All right. And with that, thank you, John Martellaro, for coming by today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. I will talk to you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.